it really has taken off so much of the pressure as far as my wife's income. Any income that I also bring in doesn't immediately have to get dumped into rent or get dumped into mortgage, which is most Americans' situation.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Gentle Art of Crushing It podcast. My name is Nathan with Undoor Properties and I'm your Monday host. I'm one of five hosts who bring you conversations three times a week on a variety of topics around real estate, business, and personal motivation. Our goal with this podcast is to help you succeed in whatever target you're aiming at. We're all committed to finding the best and the brightest people who aren't just talking about doing big things, but are actually taking the steps to achieve their dreams and wanting to help others along the way. And today's conversation is no different. We have the pleasure to have Travis Hall, who was recently featured on episode 309 from the Bigger Pockets Rookie Podcast. And Travis has an incredible story where he's done creative financing, subject to seller financing, remote short-term Airbnbs, stumbling into real estate as he describes it. What a wonderful and inspirational story with Travis Hall. So let's hop into the conversation. All right, Travis, welcome. How are you doing today? Thanks for taking the time to be with us here.
I'm happy to be with you, Nathan.
Very, very cool. How's your day so far?
It's pretty great here in California. We're going to have a heat wave coming up soon, so just getting ready for that.
So heat wave following the hurricane? Did you guys do okay through the hurricane, actually? Because that happened not too long ago.
Yeah, just a ton of rain where we were at. Luckily, no big damage, no fallen trees or anything. But then, now we're just getting ready for, heat in the 90s. So go figure.
Well, good luck with that. So why don't we kick this off here, Travis? Tell us about who is Travis? What's your story? What's your background? Where you found success? And maybe something interesting most people don't know about you.
Man, you just gave me like 10 questions. I'll probably remember the first two, but you can nudge me along. But I'm Travis. I'm married. I'm 31 years old. I live in Southern California, in Long Beach specifically. How we got started, I tell people this quite a bit, but I feel like we are just the product of dumb luck is what it really feels like. That has kind of been our story, because I didn't do tons and tons of research into what's going to help, make us financially independent. And I didn't, mentor lots of people to figure that out. It felt like I just kind of stumbled into one thing that was successful, and then stumbled into another thing that was successful, and then stumbled into people that are really, really successful, and then just started copying what they did. But basically, how we got started in real estate was with a Craigslist scooter. I bought a scooter just to zip around Westwood, and my wife and I had a fun time, going around on that. But eventually, it came time to sell. When I sold it, I ended up selling it to a very, very experienced real estate professional. And as I'm showing him the scooter, we're talking about housing prices. And at this time, we're just renting an apartment in Westwood, California. And I'm curious about the housing market. This is 2020, and so we don't know if the housing market's going to pop. We don't know if it's going to keep going higher. So I just ask him, because he mentioned real estate in there. And he said, if you're going to buy your primary residence, it's pretty much always a good time to buy, as long as you can make sure you afford the monthly payments. And further, if you can buy a multifamily, two units or more, that'll make it even safer down the road. And so like, okay, we'll think about that. And we just kept in touch with him.
Before we jump into the show, we wanted to let you know that this episode is brought to you by everyreitool.com. Every REI tool is the most comprehensive online catalog of resources for real estate investors and professionals. Whether you are looking for the best deal analyzer, the most loved syndication platform, fix and flip rehab calculators, dialers, lead generation solutions, rent collectors, or the next real estate book to read, every REI tool has it all. quickly and easily find the best software, apps, services, books, podcasts, and courses to help accelerate and grow your real estate business by heading over to everyreitool.com. And don't forget to sign up to get exclusive product reviews, promos, and discount codes. Everyreitool.com. Now, on to the show.
Why is it safer for those who don't know? Because I think I know where you're going, but why is it safer?
So, I'm like, well, we were just, you know, we were fine with a condo or like even better, like having our own single family residence, having our own privacy. And so he was like, well, if you can get a multifamily, a 2-unit, a 3-unit, 4-unit, and use an FHA loan, you're not going to have to put 20% down on an investment property. Whereas any other time you purchase an investment property, you will have to put 20 or 30% down because the bank will know it's an investment. But for your first purchase, Travis, if you use an FHA loan, you can get it with as little as 3.5% or maybe 5%, depending on credit scores, things like that. So we're like, okay, so I guess we could have multiple units. And I wasn't totally illiterate with real estate. My parents had a rental property before. Yep. And I understood the concept. You own something and you rent it out. And at some point, the rental income will be greater than the monthly cost of owning that. And as time goes on, those rents get higher and your costs also get higher, but not at the same rate. And so it becomes more and more cash. So I understood that. You know, I wasn't crazy about real estate, but I understood the basics. And so I was like, okay, like that could be good. You know, it makes sense. And my wife's family, same thing, also somewhat familiar with it, but we weren't gung-ho. We weren't like, oh, this is the key to our financial success, you know, buying rental properties, having a tenant pay off the mortgage and making it cash flow each month to pay for our lifestyle. Yeah. We weren't at that point at all. So we definitely took it that person's advice, like, okay, let's look for multifamilies. He had several units at that point himself, and so he wasn't just like preaching the real estate gospel. He was a product of it, meaning he has already had that as success. He was living off of his rental income, and he just did real estate because he just loves doing it. He's just a people person, and I could totally get that in talking to him. He's such an energetic and fun person to be around. His name is Andreas Rodriguez, a realtor here in SoCal. A really really cool guy. And I could just tell from being around that this is just what his passion. He just loved doing it. Yeah. He wasn't just hungry for a commission. He really just wanted to help really kind of get us into a multifamily. Well, after about 9 months of looking, tons and tons of properties that we looked at, we eventually found one, a 3-bed, 2-bath house, and it was a duplex. So it was mirrored, 3-bed, 2-bath, 3-bed, 2-bath. And nice. We closed on it. We had to purchase it. We, you know, overbid. They wanted $925,000, which I thought was crazy. We ended up paying $1 million, which I thought was even crazier. But then again, we had to look at, well, we're not paying $1 million cash today. You know, we've never had that kind of money. It came down to like, okay, it's a $35,000 down payment plus closing costs. We had that saved up. And then the monthly cost was going to be around $6,000 for principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. So our total monthly expenses, not including utilities, was around $6,000. And the current tenants were paying around $3,000. So it's like, okay, well, our mortgage on our responsibility is about $3,000 a month, higher than what we were paying for rent. But now we own something. A few months go by, the tenants that were supposed to move out of the back, and we were going to move in the back to have the backyard, have our own privacy. They said, hey, we're actually not going to move out when we were supposed to. We're just going to keep pushing it back because our job isn't ready for us in Florida. Yeah. And at that point, I was already advertising the front unit to be rented out for you know, a long-term tenant, because that's what the plan was. And I had briefly thought about Airbnb, but I didn't know anyone who was doing it. I didn't know any, like, profitable, like the numbers behind it. I just thought, oh, that could be it could be something that's worthwhile. But I quickly forgot about that because I wasn't in a community of people that was like giving information and giving insight to that. And so I just kind of stuck with what everyone was talking about, long-term rentals, what my parents had done, what my in-laws had done, what I was, you know, we were long-term renters at the place we were at before. So I just was going to do that as well. But eventually, because we couldn't rent it out to this on our time frame, we got pushed back months, and we actually didn't know when they were going to end up leaving. So
Okay.
we just did more research, and we just discovered the Bigger Pockets podcast, starting getting tons of info on that, and then eventually heard some people talk about short-term rentals and how they're like getting double, triple, quadruple the cash flow. Oh, I'm sorry, double, triple, quadruple the total rental income. But when you look at the cash flow, sometimes it's 10 or 15 or 20 times the cash flow. So mathematically, those things can still exist. One makes four times the other, but at the same time, it can still be 20 times the cash flow because you have the same expenses, more or less. But that got me really, really curious, and eventually we just jumped into that. And the market research I did, and I do that in quotes because I was shooting in the dark. I thought I was confident with the numbers. Like, oh, I looked up on Airbnb. Here's a property that looks like mine. Oh, look, they're advertising it at $300 per night. And I'm thinking, oh, $300 per night for 30 nights. That's $9,000. I'm gonna make $9,000. There's some huge errors in doing market analysis like that. The first being, if it's advertised at $300 per night, that means that property has not yet been booked at $300 per night. That's what they're asking. It could get booked, but it could be sitting empty at $300 a night for 2 months in a row. So that's the big danger of, oh, I'll just look on Airbnb. That's a great place to begin, but that's not going to give you like actual booking numbers in real estate. That'd be like looking at, oh, what homes are for sale today? The sales price should be close to that, but your actual comps will be on homes that already sold. They've already closed. That's your actual basis for comps. And so it's so important to do that with short-term rentals. I had no idea about that. I just thought, okay, this will be good. Making lots of money sounds good to me. And so we jumped into that. But like I mentioned earlier, we just dumb luck. Ha we happened to be in Southern California, not too far from Disneyland, not too far from Santa Monica Beach, not too far from Universal. Long Beach is like kind of in the center of SoCal, more or less, to where if you want to be do stuff like on the northern part, it's not too far away. If you want to do stuff from like Orange County, you're not too far away. And so we had just a tremendous amount of traffic coming through all the time. And it right away within about 3 weeks, our mortgage was significantly slashed as far as the income that was coming in. And so that $3,000 a month that we had to come up with kept getting smaller and smaller. And then eventually it took over the mortgage completely. And now it's the mortgage and utilities. And sometimes a couple hundred bucks left over. And so we just once we got a little taste of that financial success, we just were like, how do we do this again? How do we optimize it so it's even more profitable? And so the furniture we had in there was total junk. It was just leftover from our apartment. But at that time we weren't so convinced, like, oh, let's put $10,000 in furniture into this unit. We were like, should we put artwork on the wall? Because it'll probably get stolen. So I don't know. Like we were so cheap at that point. We're like, how much, like, should we leave anything in there that we don't want stolen? We kind of just went halfway. But it was profitable at halfway. So since then we've gone back and want to have a really nice design, nice touches, not just trying to make it a budget experience. But starting out, we were totally clueless and just tried to figure it out on our own.
But
So
very
that.
successful though, because you're essentially living the perfect house hack, right? So house hack is buying a small multifamily residential, living on one side, renting out the rest, and you're doing that to the point where no mortgage anymore for you, even some income on some good months. So that's great.
Yeah, thank you. And we definitely are so fortunate and so happy with that. And it really has taken off so much of the pressure as far as like my wife's income, any income that I also bring in doesn't immediately have to get dumped into rent or get dumped into mortgage,
Mortgage,
which is most Americans' situation. Depending on where you're at in the country, sometimes it's 60% of their total income flies out the window to living costs. And if you're fortunate, that's your mortgage. But in most cases, it's to rent. It's to another person's mortgage. And so we are just so fortunate that, we're able to provide a great experience that provides that covers our mortgage, so that we can continue putting that capital toward other things that we want to do.
So now that you've been bitten by the bug with a very successful house hack, what next?
So after that, we wanted to just, get another one going. We turned a camper van. I turned a plumber's like service van into a
I
camper
love it.
van. And I had done something like that a couple times. My
It's
wife
like
would
one
have
of those
loved
sprinter vans, like that you see all over the place, just a plumber's van.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was a Sprinter van. It didn't have the windows all around it, which would have been ideal. And you can always add those later on, but I just turned one of those into a camper van, and I have done something like that a few times before. And so we the original thought, again, kind of stumbled in this, was like, oh, we first got it for ourselves to like, oh, we'll use it when we're not, oh, sorry, we'll take these camper van trips, we're gonna love it. But then quickly realized like that's not really practical. My wife is an attorney, and the job she had at that time provided unlimited vacation. But what that actually means in the corporate world, those lying devils, means you can take unlimited vacation, but it's extremely frowned upon to take one day off because all your other teammates are under the same contract. And so when you're not working, they're doing your work. And so unlimited vacation quickly became zero
No
vacation.
vacation. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. So
Classic.
counterintuitive. Like, oh, imagine applying for a job, unlimited vacation. They probably got inundated with applicants, and then you realize, oh, this is worse than 1 week vacation. This is worse
Yeah,
than
I was
just
just talking to
holiday
a
travel.
friend who is working at this place that has unlimited, doing air quotes, vacation here, and he just put in the request to go on a 3 week trip, and they basically declined. He said, "No, that's too much." I'm like, "So
Yeah.
what does this policy mean then?"
Completely. And like, yeah, so we quickly realized, oh man, like we're not going to use this camper van as much as we wanted. Even with it like being remote work, it's not ideal, sitting like trying to do a bunch of work with like multiple screens in a camper van that has spot, like by design has spotty reception because you're inside a big tin can, so we weren't using it as much, but like, oh, let's put this on Airbnb. And so we started renting it out, not to drive, but just to book and just to like stay inside the camper van. And
So
I
where do you
was
keep this? Was this on your property? Just like a your
no
camper van on your property and you renting it out on
similar,
Airbnb or?
yeah, like that format. But we wanted to park it closer to the beach because no one, I mean, that having it parked near the pier, near the water, near the sand, is a million times better than just parking in a residential neighborhood. Also, I don't know if I would want those guests that are just looking to park in a camper van in a residential neighborhood. So those things go hand in hand, actually. So by parking it there, it became more of a unique destination spot. And I was very forthcoming. I said, hey, this is a camper van. We're not giving you the keys to drive it over all over SoCal. You're actually not going to be able to drive it at all. The key that you get will just allow you inside. It won't turn over the engine, so you're not going anywhere. We have a little toilet, we have a little sink, we have a little cook area, a little refrigerator, a little TV. Like, I made sure they knew exactly what they were getting into, and it rented out for about $100 a night, with like a $25 cleaning fee. And I usually just rent it out on the weekends, and so about 50% of the weekends it'd get rented out. So that's about, say, $450 a month it would bring in. There was some costs to it as well. So like when I would drive the van to the beach, I have to get back. So then I'm either Ubering back or getting a lift back or having my wife pick me up after work. So there was those costs. And the time inconvenience was also like a lot more than just having like an automated system. Whenever that van was booked, I had to go set it up. I had to go drive it there. Whenever they were done, I had to go bring it back. So it was definitely not like a scalable type business as far as, what if I had this with 15 vans? I would have a full time just driving around to vans, clean. Like, the way I had it set up was definitely not something I could even duplicate. That would probably drive me crazy. But it was great for that time because I had more time and I was still trying to get dialed in on how I wanted to scale my income. So for $500 a month, I was happy to be the van transportation service, basically. And then, but I mean, and we got great reviews on that. So that one probably had the best reviews with the least amount of amenities provided. So
I
that
love
was
it.
fun.
That's another win. Good job.
Yeah. So we love that. After that, we set up an arbitrage where we rent a property from the owner, and I let them know from day one or from our initial conversation, I'll be the tenant, but I'm not going to be living there. I want to provide a great vacation experience for families to stay here in SoCal while they are having their trip. And so I'll be the best tenant they've ever had. I'll take care of any kind of small repairs that come up, any issues, I'll take care of all that. And when I'm done, the house will look exactly the same as the way you give it to me, or better. And so I set up one of those that started cash flowing around 1,000 or so a month, on average. In the summer, I made more. In the winter, I made a little bit less, but I did that for about 12 months, and that was great cash flow as well, without getting any of the benefits of owning. But also, I didn't have any of the costs of owning, as far as taxes, appraisals, inspections, loan, points on my loan origination, all these things, down payments.
How hard is it to find landlords and owners who are open to short-term arbitrage like you did? Was it hard to find somebody that you would just, straight up have the conversation and say, "Hey, listen, I'm going to rent this. I'll be the tenant on the lease, but I'm not living. I'm going to be, Airbnb-ing this thing."
I probably called 10 or 15 owners until I found one person that was willing to do it, and then I just went with it. The owner I spoke to, who was okay with it, had Airbnb experience, so it wasn't totally foreign to her. She was on board with it. She liked it, and I think for her, I was able to assure her that I was really going to be the least maintenance tenant on that property. It was a three unit property, and because I was professional, when I met with her, I was dressed nice, and I had a business plan printed out and in a little folder to show her that I'm not just like spitballing, like, "Oh, we're gonna make $10,000 a month." And actually, originally, what I my original plan, Nathan, was to say, "Hey, I'll manage this for you. Why don't you take one of these units that you're trying to make as a long-term? I'll manage it for you, and you'll make, these conservative numbers." And she was for that for a little while, and then she's like, "Actually, would you mind renting? Would you mind doing it on this unit, and you can just be the tenant? I'll let you be the tenant if you just agree to this rent." And at that point, I wanted something rather than nothing, and so I went for it. But looking back, I probably could have negotiated the rent to be lower, and or I could have just passed on that altogether and said, "Hey, this is not ideally the situation I would like to invest into. I'll still manage it for you, but it's not ideal for me." And it wasn't ideal because it was a multifamily property, so we had long-term tenants living below us, and we had a person living behind us, and that's ultimately the reason I didn't want to continue. They were not taking care of the property, and I was having guests having very poor experiences. Like, "Hey, we had a great time inside the house, but the neighbors around us are just leaving trash everywhere, and it smells like dog crap in the backyard because they're not picking up after their dog." I had no
Yeah.
control over that, and so
And that's not the experience you want for your guests,
of
so.
course I felt so embarrassed. I'm like, "Man, this is one of my properties, and for some people, this is the one vacation of the year they get, and they're staying at Travis's place, and it reeks outside the property. There's a lot of noise from them, and it's just not pleasant to be at." I remember being like at the driveway as this family from Utah was packing up, and like they're packing up the van, they're asking about, "Oh, California price." They were so polite, so nice, and we're just talking about California real estate and how it's like, crazy expensive here versus elsewhere. And then like out of the corner of my eye, I'm seeing a diaper on the ground. I'm seeing like kids' toys like outside the front house. I'm seeing a candy wrapper, a soda can, a glass bottle, like laying outside in front of this house right next to me. And I'm like trying to like scooch it off to the side, but it was just so embarrassing. I'm like, "Man, this is not the type of business I want to be doing." But that's what I was end up doing at that time. So I canceled that in May, and then in July, the owner, or actually maybe that was like early May, and then by the end of June, that same property manager came to me and said, "Hey, I've had those tenants removed. They're off the property. Let's set up the bottom unit with the backyard. I'm gonna redo the backyard, and we'll put up a big fence so they can't see anything. And what if we make that an Airbnb?" So now I manage that one. So I have no money in that deal, yet I manage it for her. So I feel like that was a win for me and a win for the owner as well.
And I'm assuming you're getting something for managing, right? You're not doing
Correct.
that for free.
So I
Yeah.
manage right now I'm managing at 15% of the nights booked.
Nice.
And so
Yeah.
I'm okay with that for right now. The owner is assuming some of the responsibilities as far as restocking, managing the cleaner. So for me it's a relatively low workload. Basically, I just
Yeah,
manage
low effort. Yeah.
I'm not doing, property maintenance, cleaner management, restocking inventory. The owner wants to be a little bit more involved, and so I'm happy to let her work on that while I just handle the guest messaging. So that property turned into that kind of management. I think that was the first property I started managing as a short-term rental. Around the exact same time, two others one came online right after that. And it may have been a little bit before, but basically I went from managing zero properties to managing three properties within like 45 days of each other. And so I felt like, well, all my, I felt like I was being spread thin really quick because I went from managing, the properties I own to now managing three other ones, like kind of, doubled my portfolio within a little bit of time. So for me, that caused me to have to get really dialed in and specific on building systems rather than just responding to the issues as they come up. Because with just four units that I was managing, including my own, one time I felt like I was just going crazy. Kind of like with the camper van, I'm just driving around and I just feel like I'm at my limit as far as I can only message so many people at one time. And then to make it worse, the owner would also message me. So an example, I guess, is, hey Travis, we're having trouble with the dishwasher. It's not responding, it's not making any noises. So now I'm trying to message the guest. At the same time, I get a call from the owner, Travis, the dishwasher isn't working at the house. And so I'm like trying to respond to a guest, trying to respond to the owner, and then and I'm not kidding you, that happened three times, one for each property. So I spoke to three owners and three guests at three different properties within a few days of each other, and I was like, what did I do wrong? Like this is probably not how other short-term rental people manage their properties. This is absolutely crazy. I'm having double the conversations I should, but it's because the owners wanted to, out of a concern of like, oh, I want to make sure my property's being taken care of. The property owner wants to see all the messaging happening in case there's anything, happening at their property. They want to be able to see it, which just creates double the work for me, a lot of
And at
times.
that point in time, were you basically doing, was this like in terms of the effort and hours spent, was this like a full-time job for you? I mean, it sounds like it was hectic for
Yeah,
sure, but I
definitely.
don't know if you were spending all day doing this or was it just like more
Yeah,
sporadic, I guess.
so these crises that came up were definitely sporadic. If you're having stuff like this happen all the time, you need to really take a step back
Yeah,
and figure out
rethink your, yeah.
what maintenance is, like, have you been neglecting to where there's plumbing issues every single day? That shouldn't be an everyday
Yeah,
experience.
no.
It just happened to be that these little crises came up on the same weekend where I'm like, man, this is my weekend and this is where my time or where my wife has her free time back. And I am running around like a maniac, answering calls, answering guests, trying to like appease the homeowner, trying to please the guest. At that time, I was like, oh, this is just crazy. But it was really just a, maybe, I don't know if you want to call it a coincidence. They just all happened to happen at the same time. And it just made me really, really frustrated. But at the same time, Nathan, I'm glad that that happened because it forced me to realize what if I eventually got my goal of like owning 10, say 10 properties, or for some people it's 15 or more. I would probably hate myself if I had 15 properties and I had a situation like this, because my system is 100% dependent on me d doing something, either messaging a guest or talking to a property owner. So that forced me to really look back and or think, how can I get to the next step of where I can have a person, handle some of these things that are just taking up my time that aren't kind of like top level or top dollar tasks. Telling a guest where the lockbox is because they locked themselves out of the house or because they can't remember the code is not a top dollar task. That's a hopefully something that you can automate to be sent out by a computer. Worst case, you have a person send it up on your behalf rather than me do that because I'm trying to find other deals. So it forced me to really, invest a little bit more. And so then I got serious about a virtual assistant. I had one at that point that was helping me out, but it was kind of a similar thing. If she was sick, or if she lost Wi-Fi, or if she had a family emergency, it was back 100% back in my shoulders. And so I'm like, man, even just like, so does that mean I have to hire three VAs? And for me, that was like a decent amount of the cash flow I was bringing in. I'm like, it didn't make sense for me to have, 25% of my cash flow going overseas to have a person or persons respond to messages. Eventually, I was able to find a really cool setup of a person who already has a team established where they manage dozens and dozens of properties for a very, very low cost per property. And so I got that set up, and that's been like a miracle because I have so much of my time back rather than answering, questions that end up ha popping up every other stay or something like that. I have a whole Excel spreadsheet set up to where a person in Pakistan is now responding with my answers to these questions that pop up. And so it's not bulletproof in the sense of like everything is solved, but it shields probably 90% of these basic questions that just need a one word answer or a simple explanation to where the messages that do get to me are more higher level, like, oh, okay, let me talk to the owner and see if we can get that, corrected in the next stay or something like that. So even though it's not perfect, it's now saved me from a bunch of those questions that didn't necessarily need me to answer.
And so all of these properties are local to where you're at, right?
So those ones, the ones that were giving me those troubles were all local, which was a blessing and a curse because I felt like I needed to respond to them in person, or they were something that I could go to. So that's what my weekend turned into. That weekend was me doing there. I do have other properties. I have two properties in Memphis right now that I've managed remotely. And I mean, those are my first ones that I've ever, th those were a first on a few levels. That was my first time I bought a property as a partner. So we didn't own 100% of it. We don't control 100% of it. We bought it in a partnership. That property was also a subject to purchase. And so when we got it, we didn't have to bring a gigantic loan to the table. We were able to take over his existing mortgage payments with his killer interest rate at 3.125%.
Congratulations. Those are gold right now.
Yes, yeah, bro, those are super popular. I mean, I'm all about that. We and then related to that deal, because he had a decent amount of equity in the property also, that equity has to be paid out somehow. And so we did seller finance in addition to that. So the equity he owned in the property, I think, was around $100,000 or so, or maybe more, but he's financing that to us at 0% interest for 10 years. Or actually, I take that back. I think it's 8.5 years, but still 0% interest. I'll
It's
take that. I'll take that any
any
day.
day.
Yeah.
How do
And so,
you, where, how and where did you find this partner?
Nathan, I wish I could tell you, bro, but it's a Travis top secret. No, I'm just kidding. We found that property. We even found Memphis because we were looking for cities that were short-term rental friendly from the get-go, and owner-friendly states. So California not being an owner-friendly state. So there's owner-friendly states. So Memphis was a city inside a state that was short-term rental friendly and owner-friendly by law, by the state. And it also wasn't a vac. We were not looking for vacation markets because the partner, Nick Hedberg, and I own this property. He was also looking for something that was going to be a little more stable. And so a vacation market, like a ski resort, will make buku bucks. It'll make the big money, January, February, March, maybe April, maybe May. And then after that, it's going to be a precipitous drop in demand, unless there happens to be some crazy summertime, fall, spring activity in that area. There's going to be a gigantic drop. And so that doesn't mean those aren't good places to invest. But for us, that just seemed a little bit more risky. And even like logistically, Nathan, like regarding short-term rentals, because your income is completely based on individual bookings rather than a long-term tenant saying, hey, I'm going to pay you $2,500 per month, every month, regardless if it's a great, ski season month, or if it's a really hot and dry summer and no one wants to be here, your rent is agreed upon every single month. Right. So that's always locked in. With short-term rentals, it's not like that. So if you're in a market that's a super seasonal, if you have an issue at your house, so at Nathan's cabin, that's right next to the ski lift, you have a pipe burst. Okay. And it makes it so no one can be in that house for just two nights. So it's just two nights, but it happens to be Friday night and Saturday night on a great snow season. Those two nights may make up like 1 month of cash flow for the whole year because they were not booked up. So the amount of pressure, amount of importance goes up way more in a seasonal area versus having an error or having a mishap like that in a more adjusted market. It still is unfortunate, but it doesn't have the same financial consequences of, oh man, I had a holiday weekend blocked out because a pipe burst, because that may have not been your fault, or because the shoveling the snow or the roads were blocked. We had a great snow, but no one can make it up there, and now they get a refund. So there's just huge consequences. And for me, being a relatively new investor, I wasn't so excited to throw big money because those homes are generally not cheap either, but that was just a bigger risk. So I still do like that, but for us, we were looking for one that was like a little more safer. Maybe won't cash flow as much, but it's going to be safer. Also, if we need to turn into a long-term tenant, that'll be way easier than trying to make a long-term tenant up in a ski resort. That's probably not going to happen. So at that point in time, we found Memphis. We started looking at deals. Another dumb luck thing that happened, but I think actually we can talk kind of in a minute, is about building relationships with people. So we started making offers on properties, and we found a really cool listing agent. His name's Taylor Lewis. He does lots of deals in Memphis, and he was representing a seller on a big multifamily deal, 25 doors. So five unit buildings, or it might have been four, five unit buildings plus a duplex, something like that. So we were like, oh man, this is huge. And we were thinking of how can we purchase all these buildings at once. He was a listing agent on that, and so we started talking to him, and it worked out that the seller had enough interest in the homes that the numbers for us would probably not work for them. And so our offer kind of got dismissed, but eventually that same listing agent said, hey, I have a property that I think you guys may like, and we can do seller finance and owner finance, or sorry, seller finance and subject to, which is exactly what we wanted to do with those big multifamilies. But it was his personal home. He sold us his personal home with those terms. So totally like out of the blue, we weren't fishing for that, but he already had some experience working with us that he was okay, cool with that. So we had lots of negotiation. It wasn't like, oh, shake hands, deal done. We had to review the numbers. He included his furniture in that, and him and his wife did an incredible job in designing the home and furnishing the home. Like that was, it looked way better than any of my properties that I set up. And that's something like I've had to learn along the way is, for something like short-term rentals, it is so worth it to pay a skilled person to design and furnish your home, rather than having, Nathan, you and I will just go on Craigslist, or we'll go on Facebook Marketplace, buy that
sofa. You don't want
that.
You don't want me to design a home. No.
Yeah. You don't want me to design a home either. I mean, I've gotten better, but seeing what the competition is, I would gladly pay a person to do that. Rather pay a person one time to do that than suffer for the life of that listing, making it look like a guy's garage that has a sofa in it. So they did a fa fantastic job. It looked beautiful, and that property has done so well for us. It has the highest reviews, and guests just love it. And we've had a repeat bookings just within the few months that it's been live. And that was a large 5-bedroom house in Memphis. So that one came like literally out of the blue. But because we let an agent know the type of deals that we were looking for, and eventually, out of the side door, he said, "Hey, what about my home?" And then the follow-up deal. The second one in Memphis, it's from the same agent, and it was from his house next door. So the house that he moved into, the house next door went for sale. And he says, "Hey, I know the listing agent on this one. He'll also do seller finance." And then he just threw that deal at me. So like I spent 0 minutes and $0 hunting for my next deal,
All about who
a
you know.
trusted
I love it.
agent. Yeah, and so I'm like, I wish Nathan, I could take the credit. Oh, Travis, he knows how to
You
find the
did
best
all the
off-market
work. You
deals.
worked for
I
hours and
don't.
hours and hours.
I wish I could brag about that, but really, it's the people will give you so much more success if you can provide value to them that the deals will throw themselves at you if you're a person that know that people know, oh, this type of buyer is looking for this, or and another way of saying it is, this is a type of problem I can solve. Oh, Travis is a person that can solve that type of problem. And so for me, that's why he brought it up to me. So that's how we got our second property in Memphis.
Very cool, Travis. I want to start getting you out of here because I love these stories, but I'm curious. I want to ask you because you've done so many things from remote short-term rentals, managing short-term rentals, you've done house hacking, you've done creative financing with sub two seller financing, you've done partnerships. It feels like you've checked every single real estate box there is. What's next for you?
I feel like the success that we've hit with that, it does sound like, oh, it's so kind of scattered, but for me, I probably want to continue doing the exact same thing that I've kind of discovered or stumbled into. Partnerships make the work so much easier and make the velocity of deals you can do way faster than doing it on your own. A lot of people are in the trap of, I could never own a property with another person. What if we have a disagreement? And so a lot of people have that fear. So they think, okay, I'll only look at properties or invest in properties where I can own 100% of those pr of the deal, so that there's never a chance of conflict. So there's never a chance of a problem. The issue with that is that, I mean, that's great. You'll never have to ask another person a question or make a decision with another party. But it may take you 10 times as long to get one property than it would in a partnership. Because you save up, you buy a property, great. You now have to save up for your next property. Whereas in a partnership, you may not own the same amount of equity, but you also may not have to bring a penny to the deal. And a big thing that comes up all the time with people I talk about real estate is, Nathan, I wish I could buy real estate, I just don't have the money. I would buy real estate, I just don't have the money. And so that becomes the latent excuse of why people don't own real estate, is they think, I just don't have the money to do it. But if you restructure a partnership to where you can do one part of the deal, one part of the operation, and another person brings either the loan or the down payment or the financing, maybe they purchase it completely, you now have ownership in a deal without a penny of your own money, or with less money out of pocket. And the rate at which that home or that property appreciates will probably be faster than the rate at which you can save up to buy your next property. And so for me, I would say partnerships. I will probably continue doing partnerships, and doing creative financing is a win-win for the seller and for the buyer in most cases. And those types of deals will preserve the cash flow. It'll preserve even the ways that we can even our down payments on acquiring a deal. So I think I'm going to really try to keep focusing on creative purchases and partnerships, all short-term rental focused.
Very, very cool. Yeah, partnerships are golden. It's like, who you know, not what you know, right? It's so
Yes,
important.
completely.
How about like we typically like to ask our guests here, Travis, do you have a book recommendation for our audience here?
Yeah, so this book is probably been quoted 1,000 times. Actually, I'll give you two. Okay, so Rich Dad Poor Dad, I'm sure has been talked on so many times.
Yeah.
Super helpful. And if you don't, if like me, if you're like me, I am not a bookworm. I don't enjoy reading for hours and hours on end unless like the book pulls you through. There are a few books that do that, but generally, education reading for me is one form of torture. And so for me, I have a hard time doing that. I would rather watch a video. And so Rich Dad Poor Dad is great, but to be honest, I did not read the entire book. I just watched summaries of it, and that helped me get all the principles of that book in about 15 minutes. I got it, that really like changed the way I look at money, changed the way I look at debt, changed the way I look at assets. I would 100% look like, go down that path. If you're not much of a reader, take a look at a book summary. Another book that's really, really important, that's not necessarily real estate related, but I think will help anyone, trying to do any kind of endeavor, would be, I think it's called 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So it's not a real estate book, but it really can help you so
Great
much,
book.
because it really helps break down characteristics that very, very successful people have that you can put into practice instantly, and kind of learning a way to manage it. And I guess one principle from that book is basically, you are the director. You are not a passive actor in a great play where the script has been written. That was something that took a long time to overcome, is realize you are living the result of the decisions that you've made and the script that you wrote from the past.
So true.
And the sooner you can accept that, accept the responsibility, and take responsibility on it, the faster you can kind of write your future. And so I think for me, that was a major, revelation or major step, is like, wow, all of us have an active role to play. We should not be playing the blame game, or, Nathan did this to me. That's why I'm in this position I am today, because he did this to me. We really are writing our own script. You don't have to take it
I
from
couldn't
another
agree
person.
more. How about a piece of software or a tool, an app, something that you use on a regular basis that kind of helps you in your success?
A property management software is so helpful. So I use one called Hospitable. It's designed for short-term rentals. There's some really cool things you can set up in there for, like, auto reply. So one of the things I mentioned earlier, it uses a software like detection. So an example, questions in Long Beach, parking is a nightmare at best, if you don't have a garage dedicated to that. But a lot of times, questions guests will ask, "Hey, Travis, where can I park?" Well, you can set up a auto response to where it detects the word parking and says, "Oh, hi, first name guest, please park on the streets, but make sure it's on this side for street sweeping." And so that takes 0 additional dollars and 0 additional time, and doesn't take even another person, not even a virtual assistant. It sends it instantly, 24/7. There are issues with that, like if someone says, "Oh, if I'm
Is there a
checking on a
dog
guest."
park?
Exactly. Completely. Or like, "Hey, Travs, I'm having a great time. Parking, we were able to park our car." It'll say, "Hi, guest, you can park your car at the garage." Like, it has nothing to do with the context. So I've had to reply a few times, "Sorry, that was an auto reply." There's a few other ones that I use like that, but it's not totally foolproof. But that'll save you so much on regular questions I get asked. Guest check-in, I would 100% invest in that. Even though it's like $20 a month, you will thank yourself. Even if you only have one property,
Yeah, for
it'll
sure.
give you back that time so much.
Awesome. All right, awesome, Travis. Last question for you here before I let you go. How can our audience reach out to you and help you?
I'm on Instagram. That's where I spend most of my time. It's Travis Hall Homes on Instagram. That's it. So yeah, please send
Awesome.
me a message. I'm not so big that I can't reply to messages. I love meeting new people
Yet.
and hearing people's stories. So I'd love to hear from anyone.
Awesome. Well, Travis, thank you so much for your time, and congrats again on all this success. Even though you described it as stumbling, into these things, I think you have a lot to do with it. Well, thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to having you on again sometime soon.
Thank you so much, Nathan. Glad to talk to you, man.
Thanks for joining us and being part of our conversation with Travis Hall. We've gathered all the important links from today's show in the handy show notes below, so make sure you check them out. Now, if you found any value in our content, we'd love your help in spreading the word. Could you do us a favor and share it with someone else? Make sure you like, subscribe, comment on all of our content, as we love to hear from our audience. And here's an interesting fact. Nearly 98% of our listeners haven't subscribed. So what are you waiting for? Hit that subscribe button and share the love, share the content, and we will catch you in the next one.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.